content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Tyra Banks for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Essence. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine Online. Cynthia Cooper looks back on 30 years of the WNBA and ahead to what comes next. The Hall of Famer discusses the league's booming popularity, her transition to broadcasting, and why today's players are redefining what it means to be a star. This article is by Okla Jones. While there have been several stars that have entered the WNBA during its 30-year lifespan, Cynthia Cooper was hands down its first. After a stellar collegiate and international career, she entered the league at 34 and hit the ground running. Four titles, four finals MVPs, and two regular season MVPs later, Cooper stood as an anchor for a league still growing in popularity. For a player that dominated during her time on the court, it's been a pleasure to see what she's been able to do off it. Few people have witnessed the league's evolution from as many angles as Cooper. Before becoming the face of the Houston Comets dynasty, she spent years playing overseas and proving herself in a sport that offered far fewer opportunities for women than it does today. Since retiring, she has coached at both the collegiate and professional levels, earned induction into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, raised a family, and remained deeply connected to the game. Now she's breaking down the ins and outs of the game as an analyst on the WNBA Prime telecast. During our conversation, Cooper reflected on how much the WNBA has changed since its early days, what stands out most about the current generation of players, and how she's been able to balance a busy career with motherhood. For someone who helped establish the standard for excellence in women's basketball, Cooper remains as passionate about the game as ever. Essence, I wanted to talk to you about your transition from playing basketball to broadcasting. How has it been? And Cooper says, it's been great. The transition from playing to broadcasting games with Amazon Prime has been amazing. The studio, my God, is full of incredible technology and innovative programming. The production is amazing. They make you feel super, super comfortable, especially when they switch the lead court to the Houston Comets. I was like, yo, I'm at home, so it's been great. I've really enjoyed the prep, getting to know every single player's story. And Amazon does it right. I mean, they're really spreading the WNBA, and excuse me, really broadcasting the WNBA to 220 countries. I mean, you can imagine back in when I played, if I had had that type of company broadcasting games to 200 plus countries, it's amazing. In your role with the WNBA on Prime, what are you most excited for as for fans to see this season? Really, my knowledge from the perspective of the player and coach. So how I break down the X's and O's and how I make it, explain it so that the average fan gets it. And then our storytelling. I'm excited to tell the story of the new players in the WNBA. Some of the veterans in the WNBA. What are they like? What are they into? But also what goes into getting ready for a game. What goes into getting ready for a championship and hitting that game-winning shot or three free throw or making that game-winning assist. Those type of things I've experienced. I've broken those things down, and I think it'll offer a unique perspective to the Amazon Prime fan. You were the WNBA's first superstar, in my opinion. I wanted to ask you, what stands out to you the most about how the league has grown since your playing days? What stands out to me the most is the talent. I mean, yes, we have the new CBA, and they're getting paid a lot more money, but the level of talent in the W right now is just amazing. The interest in the W is amazing with all of the sponsors and all of the television rights and companies like Amazon Prime coming on board and really bringing the WNBA into the fold with their other sports that they have. And so I think the level of talent is just amazing. When you start looking at that class of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and how they brought that NCAA fan base to the W and introduced that fan base to the W and how our ratings went through the roof, I think that was special. You brought up Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. How do you feel about today's players and how they're approaching their career off the court nowadays? I think it's great. I think it's a lot to balance when you're doing a lot of other things other than just playing basketball. But I also think it's important for the W that players show who they are off the court and that they can tell their stories and their truth. I think those things are equally important. And then once you've told your truth off the court, You come on the court and you are the truth. That's special. That becomes super special, and it's relatable to the everyday fan who goes to work and they're in the corporate world and they do that. But then they go home and they're a family person. They have kids and they have a husband or a wife. So it's super relatable how there's those two different areas of your life that are still you. Both of them represent who you truly are. So I love what the CBA has done. And I love how these players can tell their stories. And listen, the level of fashion in the WNBA is the absolute truth right now. So yes, shout out to wearing the 4-inch heels and going to the Met Gala. No, I agree with you 100% on that. But with that, how do you balance your life and career? You've always been pretty active, whether it be playing, coaching, and now in the booth, but you're also a family woman and a mother. I think you have to be 2 feet in wherever you are. So when you go to work, you're 2 feet in. When you go home, you're 2 feet in. You're not on the iPad or on the phone, or and you're giving your attention to where it needs to be. And the quality of your attention where it needs to be. I think that's super important. So when I'm on set, when I'm in studio with Amazon, they get all of me. When I'm doing my prep work, they get all of me. When I'm with my son or my daughter, they get 100% of me. That's really in everything I do. I don't want to be good. I want to be great. And I'm willing to put in the work it takes to be great. And that's on the court and off the court. How did the WNBA on Prime opportunity come to you initially? My agent actually connected with Amina from Amazon, and then we did a Zoom interview, and I just told him my vision and that I want to tell stories. I want to tell the why. Why was she able to make that shot? Because she puts up 1,000 shots a day, or because she has that mentality that it takes to be ready and looks for that ball in the crucial moments of a game? So when I started talking to them about some of the visions I had, I think it aligned with some of the storytelling and the Hall of Fame roster that they've put together for the WNBA broadcast. When you look at the next generation of the WNBA and their talent, what is it that gives you the most optimism about where the league is headed in the future? I'll go back to talent, and I will also say the knowledge of today's players. They're so well-rounded and balanced. They understand the importance of mental health. They understand the importance of working out and skill training. They understand the importance of family, and they know how to balance it. And for me, that's super important because, like I said, I'm 2 feet in. So my family needs to understand that when I'm on the court, that's where I am. When I'm off the court, then that's where I am. I love where we are and love where we're going. I wanted you to expound on a previous response. When you first got into the WNBA, I believe that was 1996, did you believe the league would be what it is today? The league was established in 96, but our first season was in 97, that summer. I think for me, I wanted to bring my A game. So I had an idea because the WNBA was attached to the NBA. I knew that there could be a high level of success here. And so I wanted to do my part as a player. But also when you're laying that foundation, so you don't know how it's going to be, but it's important that you do your part. And that's what I was focused on. I was focused on every single time someone saw me on that court, they saw my A game. Because I wanted to grab the fans who hadn't seen me play or hadn't seen a woman's professional basketball. I wanted to see them become fans. I thought it was important that I showcase a level of basketball that they could support. That was my mindset. So did I think it would be successful because the NBA doesn't allow teams to fail? And so I was super excited that the NBA was a part of it. I knew there would be some longevity, but I also knew that fans don't support bad basketball or bad sports. Fans support great basketball, and you're starting to see that now here in the 30th season with so much talent in the W, now you're starting to see all of this fan support and sponsors' support of the W. Mismatched manicures are summer's favorite nail trend. From Tracy Ellis Ross to Sabrina Elba, here's proof that mix and matching your manicure can look just as intentional as they are whimsical. And this article is by India S.B. Jones. Flipping through a book of what feels like 1,000 nail colors, you're faced with the most difficult decision of your life. What color should my manicure be? Luckily, gone are the days you have to choose just one. That's because mismatched manicures are looking up to being summer's favorite nail trend. From Tracy Ellis Ross to Sabrina Elba, there's proof mix and matching your manicure can look just as intentional as they are whimsical. Ahead, nail artist Kenya Hogg breaks down summer's mismatched nail trend and how to achieve the look. What is a mismatched manicure? Mismatched nails are nails that are all different but still fit the general theme, Hogtail's essence. From dual-toned French tips to having every nail a completely different color, mismatched manicures are a playful statement for the summer. They might be different colors or different patterns, but they're always going to have something about them that still makes them cohesive. Why are mismatched manicures popular? Last fall, British fashion designer Phoebe Philo released her Collection C campaign, but the campaign was about more than just clothes. In fact, it was the star of the campaign, filmmaker Matty Diop's long rectangular nails with different color and opacity on each finger that garnered just as much buzz. One finger was opaque butter yellow, another was a glass-like purple, while her pinkies were solid black and metallic, respectively. Now, just ahead of summer, the nail style is hitting an uptick. Mismatched nails are super popular for whatever season you'd like because every season has a color scheme, but especially in summer, Hogg says. Every time summer is approaching, people start adding more and more color into their life through fashion, accessories, hair, and nails. How to achieve a mismatched manicure? The big trend going around now is different colored bases paired with a different colored French tip, Hogg says. You pick 5 to 6 different colors to achieve this look. Since the emphasis is on color combination and placement, choosing colors that show range, like metallic black and white, yet placed to form a balance, can help give your manicure structure. For example, on one hand, painting your thumb white and pinky black, or on the other, your pinky maybe is metallic with the thumb dark brown. Then the center 3 fingers are where the brighter colors live. However, if you're going for colored French tips, you may prefer to choose just 5 bright colors and using shades to add dimension on the tips. If you have a butter yellow base, for example, your tip may be more dark and golden. The options are endless, says Hogg. I make sure that every design has a little accent that matches the other nails without being identical. Baby blue French tips are one of the most unexpected summer styles, making way for necessary play. Mist tones like blue-gray are a bridge between your classic earth tone and vibrant shades. Mismatched manicures look best with a shiny top coat to give off a glass-like effect. Playing with shades of the same color, like an olive green to balance out the light, will give your mismatched manicure the range you're looking for. Butter yellow has long been a summer nail trend. Add this shade next to black for a bright juxtaposition. Jelly brown is this manicure's most rooted color. It's deep, smoky, yet sheer. And if you're going for a dual-toned French tip, pairing a deeper yellow with a butter base is the way to embody summer. While mismatched manicures span from black metallic to white, balancing those with a rustic earth tone will soften the style. Finding the right shade of purple, intense yet sheer and cool, is what makes a style perfect for summer. The lightest shade in mismatched manicures, a milky white shade on one thumb, makes the style more classic. Shades of green, like a light pastel green, make your manicure more grounded and earth-toned. Sheer purple is often the most vibrant shade in a mismatched manicure, which is a summer-defining color. Adjacent to black, having the other pinky drenched in chrome to give your manicure a bit of texture and dimension. A pink purple is a great option if you don't want your mismatched manicure to feel too intense. A soft lilac works if you're looking for an even more feminine version of a mismatched manicure. Earth-toned toffee shades are typical for fall, but this summer they're a mud-toned must for your manicure. At the base of every manicure exists a polish meant to strengthen and serve your nail health. All right, next, Candy Burris reveals the only thing she and Todd Tucker fought over in their divorce. Candy Burris opens up about her divorce from Todd Tucker, revealing that their prenup handled nearly everything except for Atlanta Hawks floor seats. This article is by Shelby Stewart. Candy Burris is making it clear that despite the internet speculation surrounding her divorce settlement, the split between her and her estranged husband Todd Tucker came down to one thing: honoring the terms they already agreed upon years ago. Speaking with Andy Cohen on SiriusXM's Andy Cohen Live, Spurs explained that the foundation of their settlement had been laid years earlier in the form of a well-drafted prenuptial agreement. Real Housewives of Atlanta fans will recall the tumultuous episodes leading up to the former couple's wedding in season 6 and the 5-episode spinoff, Candy's Wedding. Against what everybody believes, at the end of the day, it was based off everything that we agreed to in our prenup, she said of their divorce. For a couple whose personal and professional lives had become so thoroughly intertwined, that kind of pre-planning proved to be a quiet form of foresight. There was only one thing we had to go back and forth about that wasn't already agreed upon in the prenup, Burris told Andy on the show. That one contested item, their Atlanta Hawks floor seats. Coveted courtside positions are notoriously difficult to secure. Floor seat contracts rarely become available, and when they do, demand is fierce. The couple ultimately reached a compromise, allowing Tucker to purchase half of Burris' annual tickets until he can obtain his own floor seat agreement. Burris recounted the standoff with good humor. Apparently it was a big deal because there are no floor seats left to get contracts for. To understand why the rest of the divorce proceeded so smoothly, it helps to understand just how deliberately structured their partnership had been from the start. Burris and Tucker met while working on The Real Housewives of Atlanta and married in 2014. Over the course of their time together, the couple co-produced and executive produced stage plays, most notably, A Mother's Love, which grew into a national touring production, and developed a production umbrella that generated live touring shows and larger theatrical investments. Tucker transitioned increasingly into behind-the-scenes producing roles, while Burris used her platform on Real Housewives of Atlanta to spotlight their shared adventures. They were, in the most practical sense, business partners as much as spouses. He and I worked together, so obviously we bought a lot of things because we were successful together. The things that we purchased together in our company's name together, we had to split that equally, so it's fair, Burris continued. Assets held jointly under their production companies were divided equally. The prenup handled everything else. News of their separation first became public in early 2024, closing nearly a decade of marriage and a creative partnership that had been central to one of the reality TV's most watched franchises. Since their separation and leaving Atlanta Housewives, Burris has gone on to work on Play Angelique in the hit musical Juliet on Broadway. All right, next, Miss Lauryn Hill just set the record straight on past relationship with Rohan Marley. The icon honored the father of her 5 children on his birthday and shut down long-standing rumors about their 2011 breakup in an Instagram post, and this was back in May. Article is by Elizabeth Ayula. Miss Lauryn Hill is clearing up rumors about why her relationship with Rohan Marley ended in 2011 after a 10-year romance. In a rare post, the Grammy Award-winning legend shared a warm, loving message to her former partner and co-parent, debunking long-standing gossip. Happy birthday. We have been through a lot, but I will always be grateful to you and for you as my protector, my defender, and father to our beautiful children, the caption started. The singer of Killing Me Softly and Marley share 5 children, Zion David, Selah Louise, Joshua Amaru, John Nesta, and Sarah. Hill also has a son named Micah, while Marley has 6 other children from past marriages. The caption continued, I hope you're being celebrated and appreciated today and every day, before Hill addressed stories about their time together. For those who didn't know, he never cheated on me. I remember the beginning when we were young, majestic, and uniting our worlds. Have a blessed one, King, she wrote before signing off. Love you, Lulu. Marley appreciated the public love and didn't waste time giving it right back. Oh my word, you are the most amazing human being ever. Thank you always, Queen. We may not live under the same roof, but still love the same way. Ja love, he wrote in the comments. The post included multiple sweet nostalgic pictures of the former flames and their children. The images are a trip down memory lane, giving fans insight into the depths of their relationship and close-knit family bond. The two began dating around 1997 and had their first child, Zion, in 1997. While they were never legally married, Hill often referred to Marley as her husband. In a 2013 interview with Open Magazine, he didn't explicitly state the reason for their breakup, but did express regret that things didn't work out between them. I feel sad that I loved her so much, and I faltered in expressing it to her somehow, he said during the interview. It was my fault that she did not understand how I felt, and it was sad that we did not work out in the relationship sense. I was heartbroken for a long time. He also said that there were certain things that happened in the relationship that he didn't accept as a man that contributed to it not working. It doesn't mean she's a bad person or I'm a bad person. It just didn't work out, Marley said. However, their parenting relationship was in a good place then, and it seems to be so now. 8 jazz clubs every music lover should visit in New Orleans. And this article is by Okla Jones. Long before jazz became recognized around the world, the genre's origins were taking shape in the Big Easy. Musicians blended African rhythms, blues, ragtime, brass band traditions, and Caribbean influences into something entirely new. By the early 20th century, artists such as Buddy Bolden, Jelly Roll Morton, and Louis Armstrong helped establish New Orleans as the birthplace of jazz. More than a century later, jazz remains woven into the fabric of the city. It can still be heard spilling out of clubs in the French Quarter, echoing down Frenchman Street, and filling venues tucked away from the busiest tourist corridors. Part of what makes the city special is how accessible the music feels. On any given night, visitors can sit a few feet away from musicians carrying on jazz's traditions. Other venues offer larger stages and packed crowds, creating a different but equally memorable experience. No matter the setting, live music remains one of the best ways to understand the city. From legendary institutions that have become cultural landmarks to neighborhood favorites that locals return to again and again, these venues represent some of the best places to experience jazz in New Orleans today. So, whether you're visiting for the first time or looking to discover a new favorite spot, each club offers its own perspective. Tipitina's. Professor Longhair's influence can still be felt at Tipitina's, the uptown club named after his signature song. Since opening in 1977, it has welcomed everyone from local legends to nationally touring acts while remaining deeply connected to the city's musical heritage. Preservation Hall. For many visitors, no trip to New Orleans feels complete without a stop at Preservation Hall. The intimate venue has spent decades celebrating traditional jazz, offering a stripped-down listening experience that puts the music first. The Maison. A few venues on Frenchman Street offer as much variety as the Maison. Its 3 floors host a steady stream of jazz, brass bands, funk, and late-night performances, making it an easy place to spend an entire evening. Maison Bourbon. Live jazz pours out of Maison Bourbon nearly every night, continuing a tradition that has become increasingly rare on Bourbon Street. The club specializes in classic New Orleans sounds and attracts visitors looking for an experience rooted in the city's musical history. Blue Nile. Frenchman Street's rise as a live music destination owes a great deal to Blue Nile, one of the first venues to regularly feature bands on the block. Today, audiences can catch everything from brass bands to funk groups while overlooking one of New Orleans' busiest entertainment districts. Mahogany Jazz Hall. Small in size but rich in atmosphere, Mahogany Jazz Hall focuses on traditional New Orleans jazz performed just steps from Jackson Square. The setting gives audiences a close-up look at one of the city's defining art forms. Sweet Lorraine's Jazz Club. Music and food share equal billing at Sweet Lorraine's. Long known as a neighborhood gathering place, the venue pairs live performances with Creole dishes that reflect the flavors of New Orleans. House of Blues New Orleans. National touring acts regularly pass through the House of Blues, making it one of the city's busiest live music destinations. Its location near the French Quarter and full-service restaurant make it a popular choice before or after a night out. And next, The Black Girl's Guide to Travel. Yvette Nicole Brown is a Disney World regular. Here's what she never skips. This article is by the Essence Editors. Yvette Nicole Brown has always worn her love for Disney proudly. She's done voice work on films like Inside Out 2 and Zootopia, been in live-action projects as well, and even hosted events for the company, from D23 Expo to actual shows on Disney Plus like Big Fib. But now it's official. She's been immortalized on an epic ride at Walt Disney World. Your fave can be found at the reimagined Rock and Roller Coaster, which features the Muppets at Disney's Hollywood Studios at Walt Disney World in Orlando. She joins a star-studded cast of people who lent their talents and voices to the revamped ride, including Jennifer Hudson, actor John Stamos, and Kelly Clarkson. She makes a cameo while you wait in line for the ride, appearing alongside Muppets, including Miss Piggy. We caught up with Brown at the park after being flipped out upside down on a preview of the ride, where she shared her excitement about being part of this moment, as well as her must-see, do, and eat list when at Disney any time of year, especially during summer. How does it feel to be a part of a Disney attraction? And she says, I'm still pinching myself, honestly. I've always said, how cool would it be to be an actor, lover of Disney, and get to be part of one of these rides forever? To be the one to usher people through? I don't even know how to process that I've been allowed to do this. How did the opportunity come about? I'm a fan and friend of Disney. I've done a couple of things with the Muppets before, so I know the puppeteers. And then Tony from Disney, my wonderful Tony, he just called me and said, would you like to do it? Who says no to that? And then when you add the Muppets on top of it, it's a whole other thing. What can fans expect to see you doing in the ride? I have two little vignettes in the queue, and I do usually make it to the concert, so that's the good news. I'm working with Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, Pepe, and the Rats. How do you prepare to work with Miss Piggy? You learn your lines, and you hope you don't let her down. That's really all you can do. You're a lifelong Muppets fan. Who's your favorite character? Gonzo, actually. His puppeteer is Dave Goles, and Gonzo sings this song called I'm Going to Go Back There Someday, next to Rainbow Connection. It's my favorite Muppet song. I love that he's different, he's an individual, and he encourages everyone to be themselves. Let your freak flag fly. What are your Disney World must-dos when you visit? You have to do Tiana's Bayou Adventure, you have to do Guardians of the Galaxy, and of course Galaxy's Edge. All the Star Wars goodness. I could go on for days. What are you eating? It's too hot not to be nourished. Dole Whip, always. My husband Tony has to get a turkey leg. And there's this little Ronto wrap in Galaxy's Edge at Star Wars. It's a delicious sausage wrapped in pita bread. I'm going there as soon as we're done with this interview. All right, well, that is all for today. I hope you enjoyed our essence for today. Please join us next time. I'm Tyra Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.